Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Since mass-produced plastics were introduced about 100 years ago, humanity has produced an estimated 8,300 million tons of the stuff. Around 75% of that has already been thrown away. Every day, we're learning more about the damage our throwaway plastic society is doing to the planet. And with that in mind, Iowa Public Radio producer Caitlin Harrop and I decided to take on the Plastic-Free July Challenge to not use single-use plastics throughout the month of July. We also invited listeners to volunteer for the challenge and to share their experiences with us. This hour, we'll be talking about how that challenge went. And spoiler alert, it was not easy for anyone involved. Here's one of our volunteers, Kelsey Winky of Cedar Falls, reflecting on the challenge about halfway through.
I'll be honest, it's July 15th, and I've virtually given up on the plastic-free challenge. I'm still trying to be intentional, but I'm no longer to the point where I'm not buying an item just because it's in plastic. I really want to be that way. It's just hard. And there's things that I really want or need that are just wrapped in plastic. That's just kind of our reality in Iowa right now. So I don't want to admit defeat, but right now I'm feeling a little defeated.
Again, that's the voice of Kelsey Winky, one of the volunteers who took on the Plastic Free July Challenge. This hour, if you took on the challenge, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Or if you have questions, you can join us 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we hear more from our volunteers, we've asked Stratis Yannakouros, Director of the Office of Sustainability and the Environment at the University of Iowa, to help us put the plastic problem in perspective. Stratis, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Charity. I'm happy to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I threw out some scary numbers earlier about how much plastic we've made. But let's talk about the United States and on a personal level and focus on single-use plastics. Can you help me put the amount of single-use plastic we use and throw away into perspective?
Yeah, so let me give you just a few numbers. That top line that you mentioned, the average U.S. consumer is responsible for about 234 pounds of plastic per year, per annum. And I think that, you know, if you put the U.S. in the world context, the U.S. is 4% of the world's population, but we produce 12% of the waste. That's like 262 million tons of, per year. If you take China and India, for example, that are 36% of the world's population, they produce about 27% of the waste. So we are sort of producing a huge chunk of the world's waste annually. And 50% of all the plastic that we produce is single use. And so those numbers are stark. It's plastic is a big number, but single use is half of that. And so you see the opportunity to change what we're doing.
And of course, the invention of plastic and the implementation of plastic transformed human life across the planet. I mean, it has made our quality of life so much better in so many ways, and it's become essential in so many ways. But we also see it now, and the Plastic-Free July Challenge made me acutely aware of how much plastic we see everywhere. Give me an idea of, I mean, how we use it in areas we shouldn't be using it in.
Yeah, well, I guess, to say what's the impact of plastic, there's some studies that just came out within the last week or two where scientists are finding plastic in the Rocky Mountains, in the Pyrenees, in France. We have it, it's pervasive in our water supply. And we're realizing that the plastic that we use is coming back to us in the form of the air we breathe. A lot of this is aerosolized, and it attaches to heavy metals in certain ways. So there's not a baby born in the developed world, at least, that doesn't have plastic in their bloodstream when they're born. So we're having a hard time figuring out a baseline even for how it's impacting our lives. I think that across the board, we're realizing that the plastic we use is something that we live with and around. And when we use it for convenience items to say, you know, walk from a store to the car, and we know that that plastic bag is that's the life cycle of that bag, we have to question whether that's, and like you mentioned, plastic is a wonderful thing. It's changed our society. Whether all uses of plastic are good
and necessary. So let's talk a little bit about the plastic that we interact with, because of course most of us, I think, now recycle, and we have the idea, you know, we get a plastic bottle, I can put that in the recycle bin. Maybe this is not such a bad thing. So let's talk about what happens when you have a plastic bottle and you recycle it. What is the impact of that?
So first of all, if you recycle it, you're way ahead of the game, because only about 9% of plastics actually get recycled. And I could break that number down later. But so if you take that 9%, depending on what that bottle is comprised of, plastics have numbers 1 through 7. And some of them are highly valuable, highly recyclable, and some are not so recyclable. And so if it's a water bottle, in that case, it is recyclable. And it goes to a transfer station from, well, you put it out by the curb or you put it in the right bin. It goes to a transfer station, and then it goes somewhere. In the past, we've thought that a lot of that's happening nearby us or in the U.S. The vast, vast majority of plastics for decades have gone to China in particular, but the developing Eastern Basin of Asia in general. And I think that that's a surprise to U.S. consumers. And the way we found this out is that China enacted, I think, 2 years ago, a green sword policy. And they said that we're no longer going to take the waste of the world. And the minute that they stopped, they actually turned containers around mid-ocean from Los Angeles and said, send it back. The contamination rates are high. We're landfilling most of it. It's ending up in our waterways, or we're burning it, and we don't want to deal with the environmental impacts. Suddenly, you saw recycling programs in the U.S. collapsing across the board. And so what we found is that even when we do the right thing and recycle, there's not really a market in the U.S. for a lot of those plastics to find a second life. If your bottle does get recycled, it ends up as a T-shirt. All the plastic clothes that we wear, whether it's nylon or other materials.
Yeah, I'm wearing plastic clothing right now.
Yeah, and so am I. It ends up in clothing. It ends up in other second life products that usually don't get a third life. And so even when you wash your shirt, microfibers of plastic are getting into the water supply, and then those are coming out. So they're shedding all the time. Your plastic bottle, your single-use bottle, you should not use that more than once. You know, they're designed for single use. And so when people say, I'm saving this water bottle and using it over and over, they start to leach things into the water that are not beneficial. So that's kind of the simple answer for what happens to your water bottle.
And what is the cost if you just throw it away?
And this is a good question. There's a huge debate right now in the environmental community over whether we should, in Northern Europe in particular, they've become very adept at burning all of their waste, in particular plastics, and trapping the dioxin. So they're saying it doesn't get in the environment. We cleanly burn it. It is used as energy. I mean, it's petroleum essentially, or natural gas, that makes plastic. So they burn it. And some in the environmental community say, when you burn stuff, it's a finite resource. It has a carbon impact, and you don't get a second chance to use that in a better way. Others say, yes, we agree, but in fact, that's ending up in our water streams, in our mountain air, in our bloodstreams. So we should capture it and burn it because it's an environmental toxin. And they're really split about how to proceed in the absence of a good market-based solution for recycling in the U.S. right now.
Have we seen a growth in recycling buildings or in recycling programs over the last 2 years, since we've seen the market collapse in China? Is there a change going on in the United States?
Yeah, and this is where I'm hopeful. We've actually seen companies step up. So companies and cities have both said, I mean, a lot of cities. I was at Arizona State University for 3 years, and they've done a great job there in working with the city of Phoenix to try to figure out what to do with the 3-7 plastics that are very hard to recycle. And they've built resource innovation campuses near city landfill sites or near waste transfer stations to say, if you're an innovator and you want to come in and figure out what to do with this waste stream, we will give you money and a space to kind of innovate. And so there's been a lot of pop-ups that have started to think about startups that have thought about what to do with this waste stream. You also have people who have built waste-to-energy facilities. So there's a lot of innovation that's happening, and I think that we will innovate our way out of this to a certain extent. But I think the big answer is better design, rather than figuring out what to do with something that's been designed poorly. So companies are thinking about what to do on that end, and then also reducing the actual consumption, which are the two biggest ways to tackle this.
I think a lot of us make ourselves feel better when we recycle. We think, okay, we've done our job, but what I'm hearing you say is that is not enough.
Yeah, and I would be very hesitant to say, don't recycle. I recycle at home. I recycle everything I can get my hands on because I think that that's the right thing to do, and it provides the material for a market to evolve. But I also think that if you want to think of it as what percent of your job have you done, recycling is sort of a bare minimum. It's the 5%. The other big percent is voting with your wallet, making sure that you make responsible choices, making sure that we push companies who are responding and they're saying, how do you design things that are not waste, that have a second and a third and a fourth life? I'm reorienting our economic decision making around thinking of plastic not as a throwaway, but as a resource.
When we talk about carbon emissions, I mean, we've focused on microplastics, polluting our water, polluting our snow, polluting our air, et cetera. Where does plastic fit in when we talk about carbon emissions and our heating up the planet?
Yeah, so plastic is, there are companies right now that are innovating with bioplastics, corn-based or soy-based plastics. But generally, the vast, vast majority of our plastic is fossil fuels. It's surprisingly a lot of natural gas and then a lot of petroleum. And if you look at sort of the statistics on what's happening there, with the current trajectory, by 2050, almost 20% of all the petroleum we use will be used for plastics. And that's going to contribute about 15% of our CO2 emissions. So it's a sizable chunk if again, these are trend lines, if that continues. And so there is a huge amount of carbon associated with the production of plastics.
So we're going to talk about personal choices that people can make, the kinds of things that people can do to make a difference. And we'll also talk with our volunteers who tried really hard to give up plastic, single-use plastic, for the month of July. You're also welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Stratis Yannakouros. He's Director of the Office of Sustainability and the Environment at the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are talking about single-use plastics. We asked listeners to volunteer to take on the Plastic-Free July Challenge. And we had a number of people step up and say, yes, I will try to spend my July without single-use plastic. We also asked them to keep track of their experiences and share their challenges with us. We also have with us this hour Stratis Yannakouros. He is Director of the Office of Sustainability and the Environment at the University of Iowa, helping us put this plastic problem in perspective. And of course, we also want to hear from you. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me now is Caitlin Harrop. She is a producer of Talk of Iowa and River to River on Iowa Public Radio, usually not on this side of the microphone. But Caitlin brought this idea to the team and said, let's try to do the Plastic-Free July Challenge. And Caitlin, in getting people together to do this, what were people's responses as you were reaching out to people and saying, you know, give this a try?
I think many people, including perhaps Charity, you and I were like, we can do that. Sure. Let's just cut out plastic for a month. And I think what we all realize through this challenge is it's so much harder than we think. There's so much more plastic in everything we use in even non-apparent ways, which people kind of realize throughout the month.
Absolutely. I know that I became acutely aware of plastic that I kind of hadn't even noticed before. I remember your early struggles with yogurt. Tell me about some of the things that you ran into pretty quickly.
Well, I love yogurt. I eat it every morning at work. Finding that grocery shopping was one of the big challenges, and I heard that from a lot of our other participants as well. And also just the convenience of eating, whether that's grabbing lunch at work or grabbing a snack on the go or getting a drink at a bar, there's plastic kind of snuck into things that don't necessarily need it.
Well, I want to introduce some of our volunteers. Our first volunteer, Jonathan Green, participated in the Plastic Free July Challenge. He is the mayor of Lone Tree. And before I bring Jonathan on, let's listen to his thoughts on his first day of the Plastic Free July Challenge.
So it is Tuesday, July the 2nd, and I have just been invited to try and cut out all single-use plastics, and I anticipate it's going to be a challenge. I just started right now, this moment, but I can tell you, today it's hot, as it often is in Iowa. I've had 3 bottles of water, I've got a bottle of tea, I also smoke cigarettes, so there's cellophane plastic on each pack of those. So I anticipate this is going to be a challenge, but by God, we're going to try it. I think it's important we do reduce our plastic use. So yeah, let's see how this works out.
And Jonathan Green is now with me in the studio. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So it sounds like you had a pretty rude awakening on day one. Once you decided to take on the challenge and started looking around at your life, what did you think?
So, yeah, I mean, it's everywhere. It's in the air. It's in the water. It's in our blood. And so it's until you become mindful of it, you don't even realize how much of this stuff that we're going through, burning through every day. And it's just such an intimidating thing to stop and think that these small decisions that I make throughout the day have such an outsized effect on our environment. It's really frustrating.
Now, why did you decide to take on the challenge?
Because it's important, right? You know, it is a non-renewable resource, although, you know, everything, the environment just, it scares me because I know that we've got a lot of challenges. And again, plastic is just such a part of the fabric of our daily life. It was something that I didn't even really think about. Yeah, I recycle. I'm pretty good about that. But just the impact of decisions that we don't even think about when we take every day, that I wanted to examine, you know, some of the stuff that I just do automatically.
Right. So you talked about water bottles and drink bottles. Cellophane wrappers around your cigarettes became a problem right away. Mm-hmm. You also have shared a lot of different tape with us about even thinking about going to the bar and what you're ordering, what you're drinking, thinking about the plastic connectors that keep a six-pack together. Mm. What do you think was your biggest challenge during this time?
Oh, man. Planning ahead, I would say. Because, yeah, so much of this stuff, it's just such an easy off-ramp to make the convenience-based decision that I went to New Mexico for a family reunion, and you're on the road, you're out in the middle of Kansas at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm thirsty, there's a 24-hour truck stop. I left my water bottle out in the car, so yeah, I'm going to take the extra 30 seconds to walk back out to the car and get that water bottle and reuse that instead of just bleary-eyed in the middle of the night, in the middle of nowhere, buy another.
Right. Let's listen to you. You also took us on a tour of your medicine cabinet, which is a place where there's a lot of single-use plastic, some of it absolutely necessary, but you pointed out just how much there is. Let's listen.
Just out of the shower. I'm allergic to just about everything. I've got 3 different nasal allergy medications to squirt up my nose. They've all got plastic packaging. They're in plastic. The Allegra, the Zyrtec, the Claritin, the Benadryl, those are all in plastic bottles. If you get smaller package sizes, you can get them in blister packs. Those still have got a little bit of plastic in them, but you end up paying a lot more. Cough syrup, that's plastic. All the pill bottles are.
deodorant, stuff that dental floss comes in. There is just a lot of plastic here, and honestly, with a lot of this stuff, I don't know how to get around it.
All right, that's the voice of Jonathan Green, one of the participants in our Plastic Free July Challenge. And Stratus, I want to ask you about this, because that's something that a lot of our participants talked about. Caitlin and I both ran into it. You know, we use shampoo, we use conditioner, we use toothpaste, and there are getting to be some more environmentally friendly options, but not necessarily available right at the store that you go to. So one of my approaches has been to, I buy the biggest bottle of shampoo that I can buy, so at least it's not three small bottles of shampoo, but that feels like a pretty big compromise. What can we do to minimize our impact?
So again, I would say that there's all kinds of things. There's companies that are popping up in different spaces who are selling detergent or household disinfectants or things that normally come in big plastic bottles and capsules that you then drop in water and they'll give you the spray bottle. Things that you mentioned, trying to get that ratio to liquid to plastic down a little bit. But I think these are all struggles that put too much on the consumer, right? I think that it's noble to look at your plastic use, but it really is about design. And I think that some good examples, if people are interested, Ellen MacArthur Foundation, Closed Loop, even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce are engaging in what's called circular economy thinking. And it's about rethinking how we design these bottles and these products so that they can be well-received back into the manufacturing supply chain, or they are biodegradable. So you're not making that choice as a consumer to say, once it gets to you in the form of aspirin that, you know, I have allergies too, John, that you need to take that Zyrtec, you don't have good choices. And so it's really about design at the front end. And I know that's a non-answer to your question, but I really fundamentally think that we have to not make things that are throwaway.
So as a consumer, I guess I'm hearing you say that we need to be communicating with the companies that we buy things from. Is that what you're saying? That maybe that's in addition to buying the biggest bottle of shampoo that you can find, or using a bar of shampoo instead, if you can find one, to also send a letter to the company?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that companies, honestly, you know, not to portray, I think that a lot of companies are very concerned about this. And so if they have the indication that someone's willing to pay like a couple of cents more for a shampoo bottle, because that's really what that plastic costs to make a bioplastic or to take it back, or there's innovations we haven't thought of yet, that's the space we need to be in. I think also in terms of other big appliances and things, moving towards a service economy. The example I give there is that you want your clothes washed and your clothes dried. You don't want to really own a washer or a dryer. You just want that service in your house. So if someone else owned those, if you paid a service fee the same way you do for Netflix, if that company owned those products, they'd be more likely to be ready to take them back and refurbish them or redesign them in a way where they have a longer life. And so thinking about innovations and how we own or purchase or consume can be part of it. But generally speaking, it's thinking about minimizing where you can, and then better design is what's going to get us out of this, because we're just not going to recycle our way out of this problem.
We are talking about our relationship with single-use plastics this hour. We're talking with some of the volunteers for our Plastic Free July Challenge. And we also have Stratus Yannakouras, Director of the Office of Sustainability and the Environment at the University of Iowa, here with us in the studio. We'd love to hear from you as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Also with us, Jonathan Green. He participated in the challenge, and he's the mayor of Lone Tree, Iowa. Caitlin Harrop is here, IPR producer, who brought this idea to the table and tried to give up plastic for July as well. And I want to bring Kelsey Winkie into the conversation now. Kelsey Winkie also participated in the Plastic Free July Challenge. She's with us in our Cedar Falls studio. Hello, Kelsey.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I know that you also struggled with some of the things that we were just talking about. In fact, I want to share some of your thoughts that you recorded for us as you went out to the store to try to find toilet paper.
Well, there were a couple of things we were out of today that we needed to get, toilet paper and bread. Both of which ordinarily come wrapped in plastic. We've looked at some eco-friendly toilet paper options online, which is great, but then once it's all packaged and shipped, and then there's all of the fuel charges associated with getting a package delivered to your house. I don't know if that's more eco-friendly. So I went to Target today to try to find an eco-friendly toilet paper option. I found a recycled paper, toilet paper, but it was wrapped in plastic. Literally, they had a whole aisle dedicated to just toilet paper, and not a single one of them were wrapped in just regular old paper or just in a box or something. I was just floored. I was willing to buy that cheapo stuff that kind of crumbles in your hand just so I could avoid the plastic, at least for this month. So I ended up getting the eco-friendly recycled toilet paper, but it was wrapped in plastic.
All right, that's the voice of Kelsey Winky, one of the participants in our Plastic Free July Challenge. And Kelsey, earlier in the hour, I played your response about halfway through the month where you said you just felt like you had failed at the challenge and you wanted to give up, but you kept on trying. Tell me about some of the other things that were just really hard for you, and your husband also took on the challenge as well. What were some of the major challenges?
Yeah, I agree with Caitlin. I feel like grocery shopping was probably one of our biggest challenges, and trying to figure out how to purchase the things that we ordinarily purchase, but they aren't wrapped in plastic. So fruit, we purchase a lot of fruit from the grocery stores. I don't have a huge garden. I'm not growing my own. And I still haven't found a place to purchase berries like strawberries, blueberries, etc., that aren't in that plastic container. Apples, that's never been a problem because we bring in our produce bags and we just put them in there, so that's not a big problem. Another big thing that I mentioned in that last clip that you played was sandwich bread. We eat a lot of bread in our house.
Yes, I ran into that one too.
And I'm not Betty, right? I'm not baking my own bread at home as much as I'd love to. So I was really looking for an option for bread. And I did come up with a solution. I did notice that at Hy-Vee behind their counter at their bakery section, you can purchase a loaf of bread that hasn't been wrapped in anything. It was baked that morning, as far as I know. So I've been bringing in a bag that I put my bread in. It's like a bread bag. And then they just give you the little barcode to scan up at the register. So I'm kind of that weirdo that asks, hey, can you put my bread in this bag that I brought with me? And they're like, sure. But that's the one solution that I found so far, which has been great because we do eat a lot of bread. So yeah, that's just a couple of them. Also, coffee shops. I love just a good latte. And I had been really struggling with finding a coffee shop where I could bring in my reusable mug, and they're not using a plastic cup there and then just throwing it away, or stirring it with a plastic spoon and then throwing that away, or what have you. So those are my bigger struggles.
Well, and you also had a really big victory that I want you to tell us about. You threw a plastic-free bridal shower. Tell us about that.
Yes. Oh, man. I was super nervous. So my sister is getting married next month, and I'm the matron of honor. So I'm, you know, doing all of those things. I have the bachelorette party coming up later this month. So that's my next party that I'm going to try to make plastic-free. It took a little bit more coordinating. So it was a brunch, a bridal brunch. So we had a mimosa bar and then just a normal spread of some breakfast items. And ordinarily, people would just buy those plastic champagne glasses and maybe some nicer paper plates or fancy looking plastic plates. And I thought, no, there's no need for that. I know that there's going to be about 30 people at this party, but I'm dedicating myself to finding 30 champagne glasses that are made out of glass, that are reusable, coming from people's homes, and coming up with enough porcelain plates and using those, as well as just normal silverware. Because, I mean, almost everybody has a dishwasher. So it's like, this is just kind of silly when you think about it, that we're throwing these parties and we're just throwing everything away. When it was really, the cleanup was pretty much just as easy when we just put everything in the dishwasher, closed the dishwasher, started it, and then we just unloaded it. And what I did for the champagne glasses is I just talked to all the bridesmaids and said, hey, I think it would look nicer if we used real champagne glasses. And so everybody brought like four of them and it worked out great.
And it looked elegant, right?
It did. Yes. Everybody right. kept commenting. Pinterest perfect.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about plastic-free July this hour. With me, our volunteers, Kelsey Winky and Jonathan Green. IPR producer Caitlin Harrop is here. And also Stratus Yanakouros, director of the Office of Sustainability and the Environment at the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The average American uses 234 pounds of plastic every year. We decided this July to take on the July Free Plastic Free Challenge. I tried. Our producer, Caitlin Harrop, tried. We also asked volunteers to join us and try to do without single-use plastic for the month of July. We have some of those volunteers with us this hour. Kelsey Winky took on the challenge along with her husband, Tyler. They live in Cedar Falls. Jonathan Green is here. He participated in the Plastic Free July Challenge. He's also the mayor of Lone Tree, Iowa. IPR producer Caitlin Harrop is here. And we asked Stratus Yanakouros, director of the Office of Sustainability and the Environment at the University of Iowa, to help us put all of this in perspective. And Stratus, just before the break, Kelsey was talking about her victory of putting on a plastic-free bridal shower, which sounded really awesome. But she also talked about the challenges of going to the store and buying some of these items. And I want to talk about toilet paper first, and then we'll talk more about some of the plastic that we're not seeing when we go to the store. So toilet paper is a big challenge for a lot of people, because we know that we're using way too many trees to make toilet paper. So a lot of us want to get recycled toilet paper, which is hard to find. There are toilet papers made out of alternative things like bamboo. And right now, I had to make this decision, too. I didn't want my toilet paper wrapped in plastic, so I ordered toilet paper to be off the internet, to be sent to my home. And then I thought about all of those fuel charges, or, you know, the fuel that was consumed in shipping it to me. What do we do, Stratus? What's the right decision when it comes to toilet paper?
I think that that's a good example of how it's a systemic thing that transcends the consumer. Again, we feel this responsibility as, you know, consumers to say, I got to get my life right. But it really is a question of, and even bamboo toilet paper, you know, that's so heavily processed, the water consumption, the dyes, there's a lot of stuff that goes into making that bamboo into something that you can use in your nether regions. And I think that that's, you know, there's some misleading questions there where people are trying to capitalize sometimes on your green sentiment. And then the other thing is that you have to have expendable income. You know, for a lot of Americans, to say
mail ordering your toilet paper is not an option,
or
is it?
Or even in the grocery store, making right. that choice to say, even if it's 5 cents more, we have to be cognizant that these have to be price available solutions. Even when you want to do the right thing, for some people, it's out of reach. And so I think that it's, again, it goes back to, and I'll harp on this sort of systemic transformation. There's no good solution to toilet paper. I'm sure there are niche things, there are DIY things you can do, but it's a question of, how can we better design at the top end a system where these things are not impacting us?
Well, and I know that this show is not about toilet paper, although I think we could probably do a whole hour about it. And we're talking about plastic, not paper this hour. But I do wonder about sort of assumptions about what Americans are willing to buy and not willing to buy. For one thing, I've often wondered about why all of our toilet paper has to be white. You know, why are we bleaching the toilet paper before we get it? That has to have a huge environmental cost. So, I mean, how do we communicate as consumers about what the market will bear?
Yeah, and some of that is shifting consumer, I guess, preferences. People don't know that they don't want white toilet paper until they have it, and then they don't care. And companies are sometimes reluctant to lead because if you make a market decision to move and change the color of your toilet paper, if you're not going to name somebody but a leading brand, that's a devastating decision if it impacts, you know, people's willingness to buy it. So it's kind of a chicken or the egg where consumers, once they're informed and understand that just the simple act of getting that white toilet paper bleached has a huge environmental impact, they might say, well, I don't really want that. And then if they say, I don't really want that, and there's enough of a critical base of consumers that want to buy something that's friendly, and it might not cost more, it might cost less, who knows, that consumers and producers have to come together a little bit to narrow the gap between, are you willing to buy it? Am I willing to pay for it?
We also see on products that we buy, and again, I'm thinking about shampoos and things like that, we see sort of an eco-friendly symbol sometimes that says, usually, if you look closely and read the fine print, it says this bottle is recyclable. It doesn't say this bottle is made out of post-consumer waste or recycled material. It says it's recyclable, and that makes it eco-friendly. Do we need to be really, really careful about getting sucked into these so-called eco-friendly products?
Yeah, I think that, you know, again, there are good choices, but we know that 3-7 plastics in the current market iteration in the U.S. have very little value. Maybe number fives have a little bit. The rest of it is virtually unrecyclable. You can still put that in a single stream container. Yogurt containers, for instance, a lot of them are very low value. So you have to really understand, and again, this goes back, the burden is on the consumer to say, I have to understand what 1-7 means and what can go where and is it going to happen. And I just disagree that that's where we should be. We should have policies at the top end. So the European Union and Canada have both enacted very strong, very comprehensive single-use plastic policies. They're trying to phase out all these uses. And you're never going to get to zero, right? There's plastic is, I think, good for my life in certain ways, as bad as that sounds. But they're at the policy level, they're taking the choice away from the tyranny of being a consumer and having to, like, think about the wrapper on your cigarettes and making it something where we make choices to minimize this stuff at that level. And I think that's the way to go.
The you mentioned, of course, that plastic is really valuable to our lives, and healthcare industry is one of those places where there is a lot of single-use plastic, and of course, that's saving lives on a daily basis. You also mentioned that there's plastic that we're using that we don't see. So Kelsey was talking about seeing the plastic bag around her bread or the hot dog buns or whatever. That's the stuff that we're seeing and trying to avoid. What are we not seeing?
So I'll give you one good example is we talk about ocean plastics. And the number they throw out is that by the year 2050, with current projected trends, there will be ton for ton more plastic than fish in the ocean. And so we look at straws going to the ocean. We look at, you know, a lot of the plastic that ends up in Southeast Asia because we've been shipping it there. They take what they can that's valuable. The rest of it kind of gets into waterways. It ends up clogging them. It's a vector for disease. Then it eventually pushes into the ocean, and it's there. But a huge chunk of that is stuff that doesn't come off of terrestrial sources. It's from big commercial fishing companies. So the piece of salmon that you ate or the fish that you eat in your fish sandwich largely is commercially fished. And a lot of what they call ghost fishing equipment in the oceans makes up a surprising percentage of ocean waste. And that's something that we don't even think about. It's the fish in the package you think about. But I forget the number. It's a sizable percent is abandoned fishing plastics and nets in the ocean that are having the biggest impact. We don't see it.
We are talking about single-use plastic this hour and our impact on the environment. We have a lot of people who want to join this conversation. And Caitlin, I also want to ask you, because you interacted with all of these volunteers. They sent you their experiences. We've seen a lot of similarities from person to person. But what were some of the other challenges that people told you about?
Yeah, we heard everything from you know, Kelsey's husband, Tyler, buying roses to Paul Gilbert, another volunteer, struggling with his morning paper, which comes wrapped in plastic. But one that really stuck out to me was Jackie Koenig in Iowa City, one of our participants. She was trying to order some clothing online, which is a way that a lot of us get our clothing these days, and found some issues with it. Let's listen to that.
I definitely got less strict about it over the time, but I definitely have still been making an effort, bringing my reusable cup everywhere and, you know, making a real effort to avoid plastic whenever possible. And I ordered some clothes online, and I ordered 4 items. And I realized that each item after I bought it, I realized that each item was shipping separately. So they were sending me four different packages. And when I got them, I saw that they were all wrapped in plastic shipping bags. So, you know, even though I used the plastic accidentally, I did write to the company and ask them, you know, why their shipping needed to be, you know, four separate items. And, you know, it would be great to try to reduce the shipments and be more sustainable, and then also not wrap them in plastic, because the clothes were wrapped in plastic anyway. So it was just so much unnecessary plastic. And I thought that was a good way to close out the end of July by, you know, bringing some activism and kind of changing the system, because that's what I've realized is you can't do it alone, because without structural change and the actual providers of products changing their practices, it's basically impossible to avoid plastic entirely.
That is the voice of Jackie Koenig, who is one of our volunteers who participated in a plastic-free July, echoing the feelings of a lot of people. We also have Melissa on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, what are your thoughts about this?
Well, I'm really excited you're covering this topic today. It's been something that a goal of mine for 2019 to focus on reducing single-use plastic in my daily life. And the statistics that by 2050 there'll be more plastic in the ocean than fish really I found profoundly moving. So I've just been every month just picking one thing that I'd like to change. It can be really overwhelming to try to do it all at once. So I found more success just by focusing on one or two things. So, of course, starting with reusable bags, a coffee cup, a water bottle, and then going from there.
Nice. And but you also feel that we need to talk about the system that we're all participating in. You don't feel like individuals can take this on their own.
Well, I think it's got to be a combined effort. I think that it is up to these large corporations that are basically making huge profits without any kind of environmental responsibility or stewardship over the secondary life after their products are used. So I think that there has to be some kind of legislation and changes, but we can, as individuals, you know, you can feel pretty hopeless when you think about that. So in addition to, you know, contacting our representatives, I think that lifestyle changes to when they're accessible, and sometimes they aren't in terms of either logistics or money, but lifestyle changes combined with activism and large systemic changes, I think, is the way to go, you know, for success for all of us.
Yeah. Melissa, thank you so much for your call, and best of luck as you continue this challenge for 2019. Lynn is on the line next in Spencer. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Hello. Well, milk jugs. I know that I can buy my frozen juice instead of buying a plastic jug of juice. But what about buying my milk? We go through a couple gallons a week as even a retired couple. In Arizona, where we go in the winter, there is a company that sells it in glass bottles that you can bring back. But are the old cartons, the half gallons, are they better than the gallon milk jugs?
Well, that's a good question, Lynn. What do you think, Stratus? Are the cardboard cartons better than the plastic jugs?
I mean, I think that you have to do like life cycle analysis for some of these things. And the example I bring up is with reusable bags. We think of those as a substitute for single-use plastic. The LCA on a single-use bag or a reusable bag, sometimes you have to use it upwards of 300 or 400 times because of the water and the inputs that get into it from a broad environmental perspective for it to pay off. And so someone might say, "Well, I just collect. We produce too many reusable bags. You got to have fewer of those." Kleenexes versus handkerchiefs, right? Sometimes a handkerchief needs to be used for 4 or 5 years before the equivalent use of Kleenex would catch up to it. And so it's never clear, you know, I think those wax-coated milk cartons, in my opinion, are probably a better solution. But you're buying more expensive milk then, too. You know, if you buy four of those quarts, you're going to be paying a higher price for milk. Can most consumers bear that cost? And so the question is, a cost issue, and then a question of an LCA, and then in the case of milk jugs, they're number two plastic, and so they have some reusability.
Well, Lynn, thank you so much for your call and bringing that up. Stratus, you're not making me feel particularly hopeful. We are, you know, we've talked in this office, we've talked a lot through Plastic Free July. And I was telling Caitlin that, you know, I feel like I've picked a lot of the low-hanging fruit. I always carry a reusable water bottle. I always use my reusable bags when I go to the store. And if I forget them, I make myself take the cart out to my car and just put all the stuff in my car as a sort of a self-punishment so I'll never forget my bags again. And I hear you saying that we don't necessarily know the cost of those things. But do you think that that's worthwhile as an individual to do?
So I absolutely think that I recycle everything that I can, and I go to great lengths to grab trash off the streets and make sure it gets in the right spots because it absolutely matters. But I guess, you know, and to your point about the system, what really matters is systemic change. Like, we have to, once we create waste, deal with it in an appropriate fashion. You know, it comes back to us in the form of endocrine disruptors that get into our bloodstream. And that's not just the environmental question. But I think that we really have to think about doing on a personal level what we can and where we can. And then on the other side, thinking about system redesign, because you're just kind of, I think, you know, to be more depressing, emptying the ocean with a teacup if you think that your individual choices on recycling are going to move the needle so far that it's not going to continue to be a problem.
All right. So do take those individual steps.
Absolutely.
But also agitate for change.
Yes.
All right. We have just about a minute and a half left. And Jonathan Green, I want to go back to you in about 30 seconds or so. What is your takeaway? Has this changed your behavior beyond July?
I think so. I hope so. There's always that pang of guilt when, you know, it's like, am I going to buy milk? Okay. July was a long month. I'm ready for a gallon of milk now. But yeah, I try and be mindful in the moment. And it is depressing because it is something that all of us can have an individual role in, but it's such a minuscule thing that, yeah, we really do need to agitate for systemic change. And I hope that having done this with you folks last month maybe gets that conversation advanced.
All right. Jonathan Green, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
One of our volunteers and the mayor of Lone Tree, Iowa. And Kelsey Winke, you get the final word just briefly. It sounds like this is something that you're going to continue to try to do, at least in some way. What's your takeaway?
Yes, absolutely. I will be continuing to live as plastic free as possible. And I really liked what one of the viewers or listeners had to say about contacting the companies and saying, hey, this is what I'm looking for. Are you able to provide this service without plastic, or do I need to go somewhere else? So,
Kelsey Winke, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kelsey Winke took on the challenge along with her husband, Tyler. Also, a big thank you to Jackie Koenig and Paul Gilbert, who also took on the challenge, and other listeners who may have taken it on as well. Caitlin Harrop, thank you for being here today.
You're welcome.
And also, thank you so much, Stratus Yannakouras.
Thank you for having me, Charity.
Stratus Yannakouras, Director of the Office of Sustainability and the Environment at the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.